We kind of have a short agenda, but let's start on time and move through the agenda. Okay, welcome everybody out to our RAC meeting for September. I'd like to excuse Boyd Blackwell. I think he's on vacation right now. So Tori, you're filling in for Boyd, I understand?
I am.
Okay, great. And let's see, I think that's it. Let's go ahead and start out with some introductions. Let's start over here on the left-hand side.
Okay, I'm Andrea Merrill. I'm a non-consumptive member.
I'm Joe Batty. I represent agriculture.
I'm Brett Prevedel. I'm an at-large representative.
And Dan Abeda, I'm representing the Forest Service, and I'm the co-chair. I also like to excuse Randy Dearth. I'm not quite sure where he's at tonight, but Randy is our chairman, and he couldn't make it, so.
I'm Tori Christofferson. I'm sitting in for Boyd Blackwell. I'm the law enforcement supervisor in the region, but he asked that I fill in tonight.
I'm Cherry Jorgensen. I'm representing elected officials. I'm from Daggett County.
Daniel Davis, representing the sportsman.
Dave Gordon, representing BLM.
Okay, great. Thanks. First thing on the agenda is go ahead and approve the agenda and also the minutes from our August meeting. So has everybody had a chance on the rack here to look at the minutes and look at the agenda?
Just a question I have.
Yeah.
I went to look for them and I couldn't find them. Where are they on the website?
I understand that the meeting minutes are in the Wildlife Board packet. On the website. So when you go to the meeting minutes link, it's an audio link, but for a Word document link, you have to go into the Wildlife Board packet and you'll find an actual Word document for last month's meeting minutes. Does that sound correct?
Yeah.
Rory? Okay.
Yes.
Rory? Yeah. That's where they're at.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a little confusing, but that's where I understand they're at.
So I'll make a proposal that we approve the agenda and the minutes, which I didn't find, but I'll approve them from last month.
Okay.
I recommend we approve them.
All right.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Thanks, Brett. So all approve? All in favor of that? Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. The first thing we're going to do is going to kind of go over the Wildlife Board meeting from September 1st. And I attended that for Randy, and I've got some notes here from that. So I'll go ahead and just kind of brief everybody on what was discussed at the Wildlife Board meeting a couple of weeks ago, okay? The first thing that they talked about was kind of some unfinished business. They call it an action log items, and those items were... had to do with lead and steel shot, and also they talked about a white-tailed prairie dog management plan, and also youth hunts on WMAs. Other than that, I really didn't get much out of the action log items. Mostly, it sounded like it was pretty much mostly all unfinished business. Dax, do you have anything else from that you got from there? Okay, I know you were out there, so that was kind of the first thing that they talked about kind of in the introduction. Director Sheehan talked about the following things. He introduced a new supervisor out of the central region. His name is Jason Vernon. I'm not sure if some of you probably know Jason. Apparently John Fairchild, who was the regional supervisor out there, he retired. So one thing they acknowledged that and kind of recognized Jason into that new position. Bill Bates, who some of you probably know, was recognized for kind of I'm not exactly sure what kind of an award it was, maybe a Lifetime Achievement Award or something along those lines. Was that right? Yeah. So he was recognized for his many years of great service to the DWR and working with partners. And Director Sheehan gave a little update on the Tibble Fork Reservoir fish kill. So that they were not sure who exactly it was, but they were trying to expand and enlarged the reservoir, and in the process stirred up a bunch of heavy metals that had been there from, you know, decades and decades ago. And there was pretty significant fish kill in Tibble Fork Creek. And I think that's what, American Fork Cane, is that correct? So yeah, it was reported that there was a 100% fish kill in 2 miles of that creek, and then a lesser amount in several other miles. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on there. Just trying to, I guess, kind of clean up the mess, really. Yeah, you want to go ahead?
I guess just to let you guys know what our action was beforehand is we actually knew they were going to dredge that or let those sediments flow downstream, so we stopped stocking it last year actually and moved those fish into some other waters, and so the fish kill in the reservoir, you know, as a result, the fish kill was less than what it could have been, and things have stabilized now. We're doing some testing of fish and sediment. And we expect another flush of sediment through next you know, cycle next spring. So it'll probably, you know, kill a few more fish next spring.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. You mentioned Schofield Reservoir had, a pretty significant blue-green algae bloom here not too long ago. It's been reopened, but at the time of the meeting, it had been closed to, I think, all activities at that time. But recently, I just got a email today from Mark Hadley saying that it is reopened for all activities. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So that's good news. He talked about how the fire season hasn't had too significant of an impact on wildlife other than a little bit of an impact on sage grouse. And so that's good news as well. He talked about fall fishing and how, you know, this is a really great time to go fishing. A lot of people kind of switch gears and they're in the hunting mode. But as our waters cool off and lakes turn over, it's a really great time to fish in the fall. And just kind of talked about that a little bit. Talked about the Cut Slam program and just try to, you know, encourage people and promote that program, which is a program where you sign up for this program, and if you catch all 4 subspecies of cutthroat trout in the state, you get a nice medallion. Those are Colorado River cutthroat trout, Bonneville cutthroat trout, Bear Lake cutthroat trout, and what's the third one?
Yellowstone
cutthroat trout. So kind of a neat program. I guess it's been online for, what, a couple years now? Or
no, we started this last March.
And, oh, okay.
It's actually more successful than we thought it would be.
Great.
We've raised enough money now through that program to actually initiate some restoration programs using those funds.
Super. Yeah, it's like a $20
fee.
Registration fee. So that was kind of neat. Mentioned you know, upland birds and the fact that I guess chuckers are on the increase, and that these pheasant releases that have been going on throughout the state will continue again this year. That's been a real popular thing going on here. So just some informational stuff, and then as far as like all the action items that were talked about, pretty much everything passed unanimously. Those were the fur bearer rule amendments, the bobcat management plan, the fur bearer and bobcat harvest, cougar recommendations, fee proposals, expo permit audit, an allocation blue ribbon council letter in support of wildlife action plans, and modifications to the current mentoring program, and also some use of public for deer research on the Ponsagot unit. Like I said, pretty much all of those action items passed unanimously. There was a slight modification, I guess, on the cougar recommendations on 3 units. The Manti unit was proposed to have 5 cougar tags. That went up to 8. The Boulder unit was proposed to have 11 cougar tags. That went up to 14. And the Fish Lake went from 12 to 16 on cougar as well. So some slight changes there. So that's kind of a wrap there on the board meeting from September 1st. Okay. Any questions, any comments on that? Okay, next thing on the item, or on the agenda is an update. I guess, Tori, you're gonna go ahead and give a regional update.
Yes, yeah. We've had a couple personnel changes that have occurred in the region, one of which, Tanya Kiefer is sitting over here. She's been, are you in your third week now?
Fourth.
Fourth week. She came out of Central Region. She replaced Ron Stewart, the Regional Conservation Outreach Manager. So we want to welcome Tanya here. So she's going around trying to pull all of her hair out at one time, make sure everything's going well tonight, but doing a good job. Terry, have you been introduced?
I was the last one.
Okay, very good. Just wanted to make sure. The other personnel change that we've had in the region, we have a new conservation officer. When Dan Barnhurst retired last January, it's taken us a few months to, and the trickle-down effect, fill in a sergeant position and now to a district conservation officer. But we do have a new officer on board. His name is Cody Jones. Cody transferred up here from Fillmore, from Millard County. He'd been down there for the last 8 years, which is great for us. We get an officer that we can put out, and they can go out in the field and they're ready to go. Most times in the past, we've had to have a brand new officer come in, train them, and they're on field training for a year or so. So it was great to get somebody with experience in the region. We've had a lot going on. Obviously, it's that time of year, being fall. There's some neat things that just this last Saturday, Tanya went up and at Kokanee Days in Daggett County up near the gorge. She, what we have, over 400 people. 400 people attend that. She was expecting, oh yeah, you know, maybe 40, 60, 80. 400 people showed up, and so a phenomenal amount of outreach that went out on that. Yeah, absolutely. And the fish were there. She had to go searching for them, but they're just starting to come in. So that went well. We also had kind of a neat program that the law enforcement section entertained. August 31st and September 1st, there was a landowner, Gordon Van Dyke, that down at Sweetwater Ranch in the Booklets, he donated 2 cow elk tags. And what we had is the Wounded Warriors Foundation, as well as an 18-year-old handicapped boy out of Lehigh, came out and they went on the kind of a once-in-a-lifetime hunt. The 18-year-old, he's legally blind, got cerebral palsy. He's got lots and lots of things stacked against him. However, it was a lot of fun. We went out, a lot of people donated and supported both the division as well as these individual hunters that came out. It was a neat thing to see, to go out there and support them. And then, we've got lots going on in the fishery section. One of which, you've probably seen some of the media releases on Red Fleet Reservoir, right here north of town. Trina, would you give us an update? I know you sent me some notes on that, but just tell everybody where that's at, because it's phenomenal news.
Sure. Yeah, it's very exciting to see. The last sampling we did was out on the reservoir in July. We were looking at just the fish, how they done. As you'll recall, hopefully, we were able to stock, I think it was about 3 million sterile walleye fry. We stocked 200,000 adult fathead minnows for forage. We stocked a number of wipers of different sizes. Last year we stocked cutthroat trout, tiger trout went in this year. We transferred yellow perch, we transferred black crappie, we transferred mountain whitefish. So we've gotten all the fish that we said we were gonna get, maybe not in the exact numbers that we'll have in the future. You know, we're kind of gradually going in slowly with the predators, trying to focus more on the forage for now. But when we went in July, black crappie and yellow perch and fathead minnows all pulled off the spawn, so there's your forage base doing really well. We expect the mountain whitefish, they're fall spawners, they should pull off a spawn here pretty soon. We saw sterile walleye survive, we saw wipers survive. We did also catch a few cutthroat trout, which those were more meant to be stocked into Brush Creek and an incidental catch in the reservoir, so that's kind of what we expect there. We also saw the tiger trout come back too. So of course, a lot of them are small. I've been telling people I'm gonna fish it hard next year. We need to give those guys a little bit of time to grow, but we see it off to a good start, so we're really excited about it. And I have heard of people going out and catching the young of your walleye, which are about 6 inches, 7 inches right now. So, and apparently pretty feisty. And so we are also doing some fish habitat installation work. For specifically for the crappie, I'm not sure where we're at with that, but we'll get those in over the next couple of years and just try and provide a little bit more structural habitat. As it is, a lot of the fish species we have in there will probably prefer the dam. That's what they've done in the past. We're trying to spread them out around the reservoir a little bit more.
And many of you, if you weren't aware, that Redfleet Reservoir was treated and poisoned. Was it first week in October last year, so this is the management plan and recovery on that. There's also, talk about the Pelican Lake. We've got a management plan, or at least...
It's finalized. The management plan for Pelican Lake is finalized, and what we decided as a group, we ended up having about 8 anglers show up. We had folks from BLM and BOR, just agencies that we cooperate with. And the idea was, and there was a lot of feelings for the old Pelican Lake. Everyone wanted to see it restored to what it was. So that means we've got a reduced sediment coming in. That canal above has some issues. So we're working with Ory Park Irrigation District. You know, that's a lot of their responsibility, but we said we'll help however we can so we can minimize sedimentation coming in. We also need to eradicate carp, because carp will continue to stir up the sediments as they root around in vegetation for snails and whatever forage they can find. So we've seen, with those two things, we've seen a reduction in visibility. You know, bass and bluegill are sight feeders, and so they've kind of suffered a little bit, and we've heard that a lot, especially with the bluegill. The growth is not as good in their first 3 years, so they just don't catch up with where we saw. You know, what we've seen, 9 and 10 inch fish in the past. We don't see that so much anymore. And so the upshot is to get rid of the carp. We can't do manual removal, mechanical removal, that kind of thing. That's just too labor intensive and expensive over the years. So we are going to do a rope drone treatment. And right now that is scheduled for fall of 2017. We are working very hard to get a fish screen in place above the reservoir, and that's what needs to happen first. So if that is delayed for whatever reason, and we can't get that in this spring, then that rope drone treatment will be delayed till 2018. So it's kind of up in the air, but we're really going to work hard to try and make it happen next year. Just nobody really likes the rope drone treatment, but you just rip that Band-Aid off, get it done, and maybe we can rebuild that fishery and get some water clarity back and have it be that memorable bluegill size class that you consistently see back in the... just kind of on and off over the last 40 years, so.
Absolutely, okay. Thank you. So we've got some great things going, both the fisheries program. Obviously this time of year, we've got all the hunts upon us. The bow hunt is just ending, or at least the first part of the bow hunt. The limited entry rifle seasons are opening this Saturday in several of the areas, the limited entry areas, as well as the youth and the bow hunt up on the mountain. So gonna be a lot of people out running around. Some of the numbers wise, chuckers are up this year. Statewide, we've seen quite a few chuckers. In the counts themselves, several spots have been at a peak. So should be good for upland out there. The other animal, rabbits, we were expecting to probably crash after the last 2 years being so high. By all indication, there's a lot of rabbits out there. They're typically on about a 10-year cycle. So should be a lot of animals out there to go out and enjoy. So I believe that's all that we have for a regional update, unless you have any questions of me.
Great, thank you. All right, our first and only action item is the fishing guidebook and rule proposed changes, and I see Randy Offlinger will give us that presentation.
My name is Randy Offlinger. I'm the new cold water sport fish coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources. We also have a new warm water sport fish coordinator, Craig Walker. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here tonight. But we do have Trina Hedrick, who's the Northeast Region Aquatics Manager, here tonight. There's really three parts to the presentation that I'm going to be making tonight. I'm actually going to start off by doing some informational-only items, and then I'm going to switch gears and I'm going to get into the action items where I'm going to talk about proposed regulation changes that we're putting in the upcoming guidebook. As I kind of talk about those proposed regulation changes, I'm going to intertwine into that the results of a fishing regulation survey that we did, because the results of that survey really guide a lot of the regulations that we're proposing for the upcoming year. But I'm going to start with the information-only items, and the first one is with our fishing guidebook. We're actually going to switch to a two-year guidebook, so we're going to release that on a two-year cycle. So the idea is the guidebook that we're going to put out for 2017 is also going to be valid for 2018. And there's a couple reasons why we're doing this. The first one is it just helps the public out. One thing we certainly acknowledge is when we can frequent rule changes, sometimes it's hard for people to track those changes. And if we release a guidebook less often, that means just less rule changes for people to follow. Also on top of that, it helps our biologists out a little bit. One thing that we certainly want to do is use good science when we're making any kind of regulation change. And by making our rule change a little bit less often, it gives us a little more time to consider any rule changes that we're doing. Anyway, the release cycle for our guidebook is going to be in sync with Arizona, and it should also be in sync with Wyoming, and this is going to be very helpful for both our anglers of Lake Powell and Flaming Gorge, since those waters have straddled those other two states. The next thing is looking ahead in the future. We acknowledge that we're probably going to have to do some regulation changes with tiger muskies. So we're working with Muskies Inc., who's basically a tiger muskie or a muskie anglers group. And we're looking at potential regulation changes there, working with those guys. And there's a good chance when we release a new guidebook here in a couple of years that there are going to be some changes in how we regulate tiger muskie harvest. Next off, in the last year, we've released two new management plans for two water bodies, so Flaming Gorge and also Jordanelle Reservoir. For Flaming Gorge, I'm not going to go into a lot of details, but our management objectives in that reservoir are for rainbow trout. We want to see at least 0.35 fish per hour caught in our gill nets. For lake trout, we really want to have a trophy lake trout fishery at Flaming Gorge. So in our exploratory nets that we set out there to collect lake trout and assess the population, we're hoping to collect at least 1.5 fish per hour that are greater than 28 inches in length. Also, burbot were illegally introduced a few years back in the Flaming Gorge Reservoir, and we want to keep that population in check. So we're hoping to see less than one fish per hour, one burbot or less per hour caught in our gill nets. Also, we want to have a healthy kokanee salmon population in Flaming Gorge, so we're hoping to have at least 600,000 kokanee that are between 0 and 2 years old in that water. And finally, we want to prevent any kind of invasive species introductions from occurring within Flaming Gorge. So next off, on Jordanelle Reservoir, our management objectives there is we want to enrich trophy angling opportunities in that reservoir. So in the past year, we've added both tiger muskie and wiper in that reservoir to provide some good trophy fishing opportunities for anglers that use that water. We also want to promote Jordanelle as a family fishery. Jordanelle is very close to the Salt Lake area. Obviously, that's the largest city in the state. And it provides us a lot of opportunities for people to come up and fish for an afternoon, take their kids out, et cetera. We really want to promote that. Another thing is we want to ensure a quality recreational experience for both boaters and anglers out there, because of the proximity of Flaming Gorge to Salt Lake City, it gets a lot of recreational boaters. We just want to make sure those boaters out there using personal watercraft, water skiing, et cetera, are having a good time as well as our anglers. We also want to manage Jordanelle fishery for compatibility with native species out there. We also want to manage Jordanelle as a destination fishery. And finally, we want to ensure that no new species are either illegally introduced or moved into or out of Jordanelle Reservoir. Okay, so now I'm going to change gears a little bit, and I'm going to talk about our actual proposed regulation changes. And again, as I do this, I'm going to talk about the results of our fishing regulation survey. So to kind of get into that fishing regulation survey, this is something the Division of Wildlife does fairly regularly, so this is really an annual occurrence for us. And what this is just an online survey that we've put out to anglers. And we basically use it to kind of gauge angler interest in various regulation changes that we're considering. The survey itself is run through SurveyMonkey, so it's just an online webpage. It went from May 11th through June 23rd this year. And we solicited people to respond to our survey for just the various, I guess, advertising the survey for social media, press releases, or on the division's webpage. Unfortunately, because how we distribute the survey, we don't know an exact response rate for the survey, but typically when the division does surveys, about 22% of people respond to them. And again, this survey provides us just input onto the regulation changes that we're proposing for our next guidebook. Okay, so I'm going to start talking about the specific regulation changes that we're proposing. I'm going to start with statewide changes, and then I'm going to break it down to regional changes. So I'm going to start with statewide changes, and we only have one statewide change we're proposing, and that's in our part of our angler survey. We asked anglers if they would support the use of corn as bait here in Utah. So we posed that to a question to our anglers. We had 3,210 people respond to that question, and 70% of them came back and said they would support us allowing corn to be used as bait here in the state. And obviously, conversely, 30% of them weren't supportive of that regulation change. What really prompted us looking at this as a potential regulation change, it turns out that if you look throughout the entire western part of the United States, Utah stands alone as the only state that doesn't allow anglers to use corn as bait. So I'm really showing this here in this map where all the blue states are states that allow corn, and obviously there's one state that stands alone, that state's Utah, that doesn't allow anglers to use corn. So what we're seeing based on the results of our angler survey is that an overwhelming majority of anglers in the state really want corn to be allowed as bait here in the state. And we can see why corn could be a very popular bait. It's really related to the fact that corn isn't expensive, it's easy to obtain, it's very easy for anglers to use as well. Now it turns out that if you go back in time, there was a point in time that corn was allowed as a bait here in Utah, but it was actually outlawed due to concerns with chumming and litter associated with corn. But it turns out that chumming and litter are already illegal, so we have ways to regulate that, preventing this from occurring even if corn is allowed as a bait here in the state. So really, in light of the fact of the angler demand for corn in the state, we want to move forward and actually start a pilot study looking at whether or not anglers use corn as bait and see if some of those littering and chumming issues that were issues in the past with corn still continue here in the state today. So what we did is we surveyed our regional managers and we had them came up with waters, or Kokanee salmon, or carp waters in the state that we could try this regulation out on. The reason we picked Kokanee salmon and carp waters is those are two species that are frequently targeted by anglers by using corn as bait. And what we're going to do is we're going to include a regulation allow anglers to use corn in these waters, and we're going to assess the change in the number of violations in terms of chumming and littering violations on those waters, both before and after the regulation change, and just see if we see any chumming and littering occur on these waters after we put this regulation in place. So anyway, the waters that we're proposing for this are Cutler Reservoir, Deer Creek Reservoir, Electric Lake, Fish Lake, Flaming Gorge Reservoir, Lake Powell, State Line Reservoir, and Utah Lake. So that's eight water bodies. And one reason we went with eight is we wanted to make sure we had a large enough sample of water bodies to give us, you know, good representation across the state, understanding how anglers are using corn and whether littering and chumming are really occurring. Okay, so now I'm going to switch gears. I'm going to talk about specific regulation changes we're proposing for regions within the state. I'm actually going to start with the southern region. And the first one in the southern region, we asked anglers as part of our angler survey if they would support increasing the brook trout limit on Donkey Lake to 16 fish. The reason that we're proposing this regulation change is Donkey Lake has a very stunted brook trout population. So there's just a lot of brook trout in our water body, a lot of mouths to feed. They're competing with one another, and it's really decreasing their growth weight. So what we're looking at is increasing the limit to promote anglers to harvest more fish out of that water body, which should help increase the growth rate of the fish and make, I guess, just larger brook trout there in Donkey Lake. So we posed this question to 3,700 anglers, and 67% of them came back and said that they would be supportive of us increasing the brook trout limit on Donkey Lake to 16 fish. 5% came back and said they wouldn't be supportive, and 19% said they were indifferent on whether or not we changed the regulation on Donkey Lake. So next off, we have three lakes in the Monroe Mountains that experience frequent winter kills of stock trout. And anglers actually approached us and asked to have the opportunity to harvest those fish before they're lost due to winter kill. So we asked anglers if they would support changing the rainbow trout limit on these three lakes from the statewide limit, the standard statewide limit, of 4 fish to 8 fish, so doubling that limit from August 15th to December 31st of each year. So again, the idea here is to allow anglers toward the tail end of the year to harvest more fish from these waters so we could get those fish out and give them a chance to catch them before they die due to winter kill. So we had 3,483 people respond to this question. The lakes that we asked them about were Big Lake, Deep Lake, and Annabella Lake. And we basically gave them the option saying yes, they would support the regulation change, no, they wouldn't support the regulation change, or if they were indifferent on whether or not we changed that regulation. So I'm showing the results here. What I'm doing is I'm breaking it down by lake. So we have Annabella Lake at the top, Deep Lake in the middle, and Big Lake at the bottom. And the blue bars represent people who basically said, yes, they would support us increasing the rainbow trout limit to 8 fish on these waters toward the tail end of each year. The orange bars represent people saying no, and the red bars representing people had no preference. And what we see is for all three water bodies, an overwhelming majority of anglers were supportive of that regulation change. So given that, what we're proposing in the southern region is for Donkey Lake to increase the brook trout limit to 16 fish, and then a Big Lake, Deep Lake, and Annabella Lake, we want to increase the trout limit to 8 fish between August 15th and December 31st of each year. Okay, so now I'm going to shift to the northern region. What we're proposing in the northern region is to remove a seasonal closure for Cold Springs Lake, which is also known as Honeyville Pond. Right now, that water body is closed between January 1st and right before Memorial Day each year. What we're hoping to do is just open it up for anglers year-round. We also want to add Smith Family Park in Far West to the list of community fishing waters. This is a new park that's being constructed by Smith and Edwards there in Far West, and they're constructing a pond out there, and we just want to add it to the list of community waters. Now shifting to the central region, first off, on Jordanelle Reservoir, we posed a question to our anglers whether they'd be supportive of us implementing a 6-fish bass limit with no size restrictions of that reservoir. Right now, Jordanelle Reservoir has a 6-fish bass limit, but only one of those fish could be greater than 12 inches in length. What we really have at Jordanelle is a very stunted bass population. We have a lot of fish, and we're just trying to help anglers or promote anglers to remove some of those bass from the reservoir. So we posed that question to the anglers. We had 3,705 of them respond. 61% of them came back and said they would be supportive of us basically implementing a 6-fish limit with no size restriction on bass at Jordanelle. 11% said no, and 28% said they had no preference on whether or not we change that regulation on that reservoir. So given that, what we're proposing at Jordanelle is to go ahead with that 6-fish smallmouth bass limit, no size restrictions. And as I talked about earlier, we're implementing a new management plan at Jordanelle Reservoir. We think that this regulation change helps us work toward that management plan and meeting some of the objectives in that plan. So the ones we're going to kind of highlight is ones that this regulation change really helps with. It helps enrich trophy angling opportunities in Jordanelle, helps us to manage Jordanelle as a destination fishery, and it also helps us to ensure that no new species are illegally moved into or out of Jordanelle Reservoir. Now also in Jordanelle Reservoir, we're proposing to remove the fillet restriction for smallmouth of that reservoir. And again, from the management plan, that helps us promote a family fishery, and it helps ensure a quality recreational experience for boaters and anglers. Now also in the central region, what we're proposing is to extend the catch and kill regulation for northern pike that currently exists within Utah Lake into the tributaries of the lake as well. And then finally in the central region, we're looking to add riverfront pond to the list of community fishing waters in that area. Okay, so now we're going to shift to the northeast region. I'm actually going to ask Karina Hedrick, the regional manager, to come up and talk about the proposed regulation changes in this particular region.
I'm going to destroy everything. Thanks. Just a couple to go through for the northeastern region. First, we're proposing the use of burbot as cut bait at Flaming Gorge. And as you can see, this was asked of, well, I guess we had 3,699 respondents. Overwhelmingly, they said they would support that, 72%. 7% said no, and 21% said no preference. We also thought that with the recent addition of perch at Big Sand Wash and Red Fleet, we should ask about whether or not the public would support using perch parts as a legal bait at Big Sand Wash and Red Fleet Reservoir. 3,704 respondents, and overwhelmingly again, 65% said yes, they'd support that. 9% said no, 26% said no preference. So then for the northeastern region, it becomes adding burbot to the list of cut bait for Flaming Gorge Reservoir, and then adding yellow perch eyes and parts as available bait at Big Sand Wash and Red Fleet Reservoir. We also, Bruff Reservoir has had an influx of common carp and is in dire need of some fisheries management planning, but we don't have time to get to it. So, not for a couple more years. So, right now it is a trophy trout fishery, but we also actually have largemouth bass, we have sunfish. We just needed to take the trophy regulation away from that water and just allow your statewide standard regulations, any legal bait, limit of 4 trout, of course, limit of 6 bass, sunfish, that kind of thing. So we've had 3,698 respondents. 72% said yes, 6% said no, they would not support, and then 22% said no preference. So that proposal then would be to change the regulation on Brough Reservoir to 4 trout possession limit and allow all legal baits.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Karina. So that really covers it for the regulation changes that we're proposing for the upcoming year, but I just want to kind of close things out to say that we always have our eyes set on future regulation changes. So one part of the survey that we administered this time around is we actually asked people open-ended questions so that we gave them the opportunity just to provide comments back to us. We had about 1,500 people provide comments to us, and what we did is we went through all those comments and we kind of categorized them to kind of lump and come up with general groups of responses that people had to, you know, in terms of their opinions on how we're doing as an agency. Turned out we came up with about 125 different categories. That's too many for us to really show up here. But what we did is we're showing the top 10 most common comments we got back from anglers. So I'm showing the percentage of respondents who had those and then those 10 different comment types. So the most common comment we got back from about 17% of anglers is they were just thinking that we did a good job and they encouraged us to keep up the good work. We had about 15% of anglers who wanted us to increase trout limits in the state. We had about 12% who wanted us to improve the management of bass in the state. We had about 10% who were concerned about law enforcement in our waters and wanted to see more enforcement. We had another about 10% who wanted more fly and lure only regulations in the state. We had about 8% who wanted us to increase species diversity, another about 8% who wanted to increase access to private waters. We had about 7% who wanted us to remove slot limits, and about 6% who wanted us to improve community fisheries and fix Schofield Reservoir. So I just want to thank you all for your time tonight. One thing I do want to say is that fisheries in the state, fish in the state, are really a community resource, so they're owned by the people of the state. And us as an agency, we manage those fish to the benefit of the people. So one thing that we really want to do is listen to the people of the state and kind of see what comments, what suggestions they have for us. So we encourage people to share any feedback that they have, and we try to incorporate that, listen to it, into any management changes that we make. So we encourage people to submit any comments they have to us by June 15th of each year. That just gives us time to incorporate those and make regulation changes each year. You can share your ideas with your regional manager. So Trent is the regional manager in the Northeast region. You can also come to RAC meetings and share your suggestions. And we also have a number of online forums, so whether it's through email or a web-based survey link we have at the bottom for sharing suggestions, or you can mail us at that address on there. But anyway, that's all I have tonight, and I'd like to thank you guys for your time. I'm welcome to take questions if you guys have any.
Great. Thanks, Randy, and thanks, Trina. I guess first of all, from the RAC, are there any questions from the RAC? Okay, if not, and how about questions from the public?
I have one, just probably more details about...
Sir, would you please come up to the microphone and state your name for the record?
My name is Andrew Erkenbrack. I just wanted to know more details on the plan for Brough Reservoir. Just a little was mentioned that there's a lot of species and carp in there, but just kind of want to know if there is any idea of future plans, or maybe it's not to that point yet.
There is no future plan right now. Sorry, we have red fleet pelican. We're starting the management plan for starvation, and then we'll do Steinecker. We had to do the big four, and so then we'll knock out Brough after that. It is important. It is on our list. It is a priority, but it's one of many right now. So there is there has been discussion resort to the trophy trout water. There are water quality issues, so that might bring in. You know, just the need to maybe go to a more warm water fishery. But at this point, we haven't set anything, and we are taking comments. And, you know, just because we're maybe a couple of years out doesn't mean we can't take your comments. And if you'd like to help participate in management planning, definitely get us your name and contact info, and we'll be, we can include you when we start doing that. Because we will want angler input when we start doing that. So, okay.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the public? How about comments from the public? Yeah, Ken?
Did I give...
I've got a comment card. You're Ken, right?
Yeah.
Is this on the fisheries or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Ken Strong, representing Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. First of all, I'd like to congratulate Randy on his new position with the state and Tanya with her new position out here. And I'd like to thank all of you for the effort and time you put in on the Regional Advisory Council to make things better in this area for fishing and hunting. We, as Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife, go along with recommendations of the division with the one exception and two additives. The exception is corn. There's a little write-up there. We're worried that corn is going to turn into chumming and littering. And I'll be honest with you, I was one of those that voted on the survey to allow corn until I got thinking about how easy it is when you don't want to spill it in your boat, you don't want to take it home with you, so it's easy to just dump it over the side. And we learned the other night in Southern Rack that that is chumming, whether you're fishing or not. If you dump the rest of it out, it's chumming. But we would like to see it, we're worried about it becoming an issue with littering and chumming. And on these other states around, the ones that connect right to us, Wyoming and Idaho do not allow chumming, but Colorado does, New Mexico does, Arizona does, Nevada does, and Montana does. We just don't want it to become an issue of chumming, because that's what we're really inviting if we allow corn as a bait. And second of all, one of the reasons was kokanee, co-fishermen wanted the corn. But you got to realize that kokanee are zooplankton eaters. They don't eat corn. The smell might attract them, and then they get ticked off at the squid or whatever's waving in front of them, and they attack it. They don't eat it. They attack it to kill it and leave it alone. So we would prefer that you guys think twice about this corn issue, because we're afraid of what it can cause. Second of all, there's a problem in the state with fish getting moved around the state from one water to the other. One of those issues took place in central Utah, where they took northern pike, guessing from Yuba, put them in Utah Lake. They've taken off. They're creating a real problem, especially with June suckers and the other things down there. They spawn in the spring each year. In the spring, all the streams draining into Utah Lake are closed to angling. So what we would like to see done is that removed and allow those streams to be open for the taking of northern pike, so that they can help remove some of those. We have a catch and kill on this on this presentation, that catch and kill to kill all northerns that we catch. But like I say, when they're most vulnerable to be caught, we're not allowing the fishing. So we'd like to see that opened up to year-round fishing. And then the last issue would be Strawberry Reservoir. A few years ago, the Wildlife Board directed the division to look at Strawberry as a two-day possession limit. In the state of Utah, all waters have a two-day possession limit with the exception of Strawberry and Flaming Gorge. Flaming Gorge because it's tied to Wyoming. People do not understand that what a two-day possession limit is, I guess, because they feel like it's already there on Strawberry. And in the survey, more people wanted than did not want the two-day possession limit at Strawberry. So we're proposing that you look at that and turn Strawberry, or our vote to have Strawberry become a two-day possession limit to go along with the rest of the state. Thank you so much for your time and your efforts. I appreciate the time being here. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. All right. Are there any comments from the RAC?
I can put in a question if I can.
Yeah, go ahead, Rand.
Since I brought So is the reason the tributaries of Utah Lake are closed because of the June sucker run? Is that the...
No, that's one of two regulations that was a, they were social regulations. There were people snagging walleye during the spawn. That was one. The other is Willard Bay. We changed the, we opened Willard Bay, the inlet, because of a similar issue. You had anglers that were snagging walleye, which is, you know, to keep a snag fish is illegal. To snag a fish is illegal. And so the anglers weren't getting along, and so we closed that. Since we've opened Willard Bay, this is the other one in the state that remains closed, and it's merely because we had anglers that couldn't get along down there.
So with the June sucker, the northern pike are a major threat?
No. I had a discussion with both of our native species coordinators and asked them about, you know, the impact to June sucker about because of snagging, and there was none.
Are there any other comments on the RAC? Yeah, go ahead.
So I can see what you're saying about the corn as far as the possibility of chumming. I guess mine's also a question to maybe the law enforcement. How is it difficult to be able to, you know, I mean, how difficult is it to catch somebody chumming?
Depends on the water.
Okay. So
it really depends on the water and how, what, and how the approach in terms of how you observe folks and sit and wait and watch and see how they're fishing once you identify them and season them. It'll be a difficult statistic to really hang a hat on in terms of what, if you base it on the violation rate. But there's not many other ways to do it other than maybe in the survey. Some of the questions that where you ask the public what they observe. But it's also got its own issues.
And the only other thing to add to that is, as was alluded to earlier, both chumming and littering are already currently illegal.
Yeah, and those are, we try hard on those, both those issues.
Is it, I don't know who to ask this question to, but is it realistic to make a regulation where they have to keep the corn in a sealed container versus a can? Because, I mean, I've been out law enforcement in the past where fishermen are sinking beer cans because they don't want to get caught with them in the boat and doing things like that. So I can see the concern with corn cans as well. But mm-hmm. Is that too stringent or is it a possibility? I don't know who to ask that to, but.
Go ahead, Chad.
So you mean to make it that they put them in a Ziploc bag or something?
Resealable container of some sort so there's no spilling that occurs. Mm-hmm. Potential for littering's not there.
I think the biggest part of the litter is the can going in there. And the other thing we're probably solving by saying it's okay to use corn is that when the game warden comes up or they figure somebody's the game warden and start tipping corn cans into the lake so they don't have any evidence in the boat. Maybe that'll go away and we'll have less littering in some regards. I don't know, there's a lot of difficult things to answer.
It's hard. If you look back over the history, what we're trying to do is become less restrictive rather than more. And the more we add to it, the bigger the proclamation guidebooks. And it's hard, you know, you want a family-friendly water in a lot of places, so it's hard when you place more restrictions.
And then another question. So then again, it's a pilot study. So that means, well, of course, you'll do a survey next year and evaluate it. And so as a pilot study, you expect it to go for how long?
2 years.
2 years, okay.
I have a question. Yeah,
go ahead.
Two of the issues that Mr. Strong brought up were having a 2-day possession limit for strawberry and the inlets to Utah Lake being closed. we're not taking action on them tonight, are we? That's not part of any of our discussion, so that this is just something that you suggest for future, is that right?
No. The inlets to Utah Lake we're asking to have open to year-round fishing, and the two-day possession limit put on Strawberry to match the rest of the state. You guys can vote on that, and if passed, it will go to the board, and then the board makes the final decision.
Is that right? We can vote on that tonight?
As long as we, when we do a proposal, we accept their suggestions.
As long as that motion passes.
Except for that, or vote with that.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Yeah, go ahead, Jack.
Just for that, what's the definition of a destination fishery? Or I've been looking for the plan so I can understand the difference.
Flaming Gorge.
Well, George, no.
You know when you see it?
Like a popular.
It's not a pointy question. I just couldn't find the plan to understand.
A destination fishery is one that draws people statewide.
Okay, thank you. That's why I just was curious.
Thanks, Drew.
So could we have a little input on the one-day possession limit at Strawberry? Was that just because of the cutthroat?
I'm sorry, I was...
An explanation of why Strawberry is unique on the possession limit?
What we had is we had a water that was, it's incredibly popular, and they wanted, well, we changed the rest of the state, and they wanted 2 years to evaluate how that change impacted the rest of the state. So we had some creel surveys ongoing, which we did a follow-up creel, kind of an abbreviated creel, when the pressure was highest in the summer, and evaluated the difference in people's behavior, how many fish they took home. We couldn't detect a change, and so they have a creel survey going on right now. They wanted to finish that creel survey or summarize those results so they can, you know, see how people would respond to that regulation change before we move forward. I don't think they're opposed to it. It's just that they wanted that opportunity.
So that would be 2 years from now?
Yes. Okay. If we go to a two-year proclamation, the next time that we would be back would be in 2019.
Okay. All right. Are there any other comments, questions on this? If not, we'll go ahead and ask for a motion from the RAC on these fishing regulations.
I'll make the motion that we adopt the plan as it has been proposed.
Okay, Joe Batty's made the motion to adopt the fishing regulation changes as proposed by the DWR. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Jerry Jorgensen, second that. All in favor of that? Okay. Looks like it's unanimous. Okay, the next thing on our agenda is the once-in-a-lifetime archery hunt strategies. This is an informational-only item. This is going to be presented by Dax. And
okay. Thanks, Mr. Chairman, RAC. I'm going to introduce Kevin Adamson from Utah Bowman's Association. They came in and approached the division with some ideas for how to handle some hunting for once-in-a-lifetime species, and maybe we'll be adding muskie to that list in a couple years, who knows. But, The director's office said, you know, this is an interesting idea. Let's have them take this around to the racks and start a discussion and get some feedback. The division's official position on this, we're neutral about this right now, but we just want to get the discussion going and get some information, get the information out there and get people thinking about it, talking about it. And so with that, we'll have over to Kevin for a few minutes.
Mr. Chairman, RAC members, thank you. And I just wanted to second what Ken said earlier. Thank you for your time and effort that you put in to make hunting and fishing throughout the state better for all of us. As Dax said, so let me back up. Again, my name is Kevin Adamson. I'm a board member for Utah Bowman's Association, currently serving as our chief financial officer. as a board of directors for UW Bowman's Association, we've been kicking around an idea for a little over a year, and actually had the opportunity to go sit down with Director Sheehan, and we presented this idea to him, got some feedback from him, and from that discussion, he said, okay, go put a presentation together, come back to our brown bag session that we hold for the DWR, and let's talk about it even more then. So we did that. From that discussion, he said, okay, now let's take it out to the racks. Let's get this presented as an informational item, and let's get some more information on it. So that's what I'm presenting tonight. It's an informational only item, and if time, Mr. Chairman, I would love to have any comments or suggestions afterwards, but that's totally up to you, and if time permits. Okay, let me make sure I can put my glasses on. Let's see where the page down bottom is.
Just right here.
Okay. The purpose for our proposal is to provide a once-in-a-lifetime archery hunt opportunity. Currently, those individuals who apply for once-in-a-lifetime species, once you are lucky enough and you draw that permit, you do have the opportunity to hunt with your weapon of choice, any weapon that you choose. People can go out and carry a bow in one hand with a rifle on their shoulder. Right now, it's a weapon of choice. You can hunt with whatever you want during the current seasons. You can carry a muzzleloader and a rifle. What we would like to propose tonight is, once you draw that tag, once you have that tag in hand, you have a second option. Option two is you can go exchange that permit for an archery-only permit. When you exchange that permit carries with it new season dates for each of the specific species. What we're proposing, sorry, I feel more comfortable walking around, but I know I probably need to just stand right here. Here's the five species for once in a lifetime. Moose, bison, Rocky Mountain goat, desert, and Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep. What we're proposing is that when you draw that moose tag, if you choose option B, then you have the opportunity to hunt 7 days before the current offering, and you forfeit the opportunity to hunt during that current opportunity, but you have 21 days after. Bison, you have 21 days before the current offering. And I'll go through a little bit of specifics as to why we chose each of these dates and the time frames for them. Rocky Mountain goat, 10 days before. You'll see that only 7 days afterwards. As we presented the ideas, we kicked around the idea with the DWR and amongst ourselves as board of directors, we became aware of agreements that are in place, Forest Service agreements, road closures happen. The feedback we received from the DWR was, do not provide a hunt opportunity when the roads are closed, when nobody can even get access to where you go. And there are certain road closure dates that are in place today that can't be changed, specifically pertaining to Rocky Mountain goat. Desert bighorn sheep and Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep, you'll see that the dates are 21 days after the current offering. Bison's 21 days before. Feedback we received was, once that current hunt takes place for bison and people are out there shooting rifles at them, you won't find a bison to get close enough to kill it with a bow. So the feedback we received was, present 21 days beforehand. You can go in 21 days before the current offering and hunt. Also, the discussions were, we know that the DWR really tries to have 100% kill rate on the once-in-a-lifetime species. As a result of that, many of these once-in-a-lifetime species dates are offered during current rut for that species. That's the best time to hunt. But anybody knows you want to go hunt limited entry elk, you hunt during the rut. That's the best time to kill an elk. Desert bighorn sheep and Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep, the current dates that are in place today are just right before the rut. The feedback we received was, go present and go hunt archery after. That's going to give you your best opportunity to get close enough to those, to the sheep. If this was in place today, here's how it would affect 2016 dates. Moose, September 10th through September 16th would be archery only, and then October 21st through November 10th, archery only. Bison, we are not proposing any change for Antelope Island. You can see the current dates there of December 5th through December 7th. I believe those are the dates. I'm pretty sure I pulled this from the proclamation. So this would not affect the Antelope Island Mound. The other feedback we received was for the Henry Mounds and Boat Cliffs, do not interfere with the rifle deer hunt that takes place on those two units. Boat Cliffs and Henry Mountains rifle deer hunt is October 22nd through October 30th. So we're proposing an October 1st through October 21 is what we would propose for this year. Rocky Mountain Goat, you'll see the 10 days before. The 14 days that would coincide with the current hunt would be the last 14 days of each of those different units, and then 7 days after. Same thing with Bighorn Sheep, the last things. We're not proposing any change to Pine Valley, Antelope Island, or Pilot Mountain. And I'll give you a little bit of information on those in just a minute. Benefits. These are the benefits of doing this. This provides an archery-only hunt opportunity for those people who choose option B. It also provides a potential fewer hunters in field for all of the other current hunts that go on. And the other feedback that we received was do not present anything that would change the current draw process or the draw odds. When we sat down with Director Sheehan, the initial feedback was anytime they request a change from the organization in Nevada, it's a minimum of $10,000 to change the draw process. When they have a coding change for the application process, you're talking $10,000 minimum. And so that's why we're not proposing anything, any change for that. Discussion items. We know that on some of these lake hunts, this is the time when the DWR does their flying time, their aerial surveys for the animals. We know how important that is because that's what can determine permit numbers for the next year. Hunters who would choose option B, who would then choose to hunt during that time, would be made aware that this is a possibility, that this may happen as you're out there in the field, as you're sneaking in close with the boat, somebody may fly over the top of you because an aerial survey may be taking place. Again, we know Forest Service has road closures. There's an interstate agreement with Nevada on the Pilot Mountain unit. That's why we're not proposing any change to that unit. We don't want to affect that at all. I talked a little bit about the Henrys and the Boat Cliffs deer hunt. And the one item of discussion that that we as a board of directors for Utah Bowmans have kicked around a little bit and is the potential for an overall lower success. Archery success rate is lower than rifle or muzzleloader. On average, we're in the 20% success rate. And even in that 20% for limited entry. So, thank you. If time, I would love to answer any questions or hear discussion.
I think we have some time, yeah. Are there any questions or comments from the RAC?
Let me just one thing. Again, this is informational only.
Sure.
It's not that there'll be a vote or anything. So
right.
What, if there was 10 permits given for a certain species, what would you think the average bowman out there, if there's a survey, I don't know if that's the angle you're taking, that would...
And we choose option
to choose that.
Great question. So a little bit of formality of how we've done it within our organization. We created the proposal, we sat down with Director Sheehan, we went to the DWR, we presented it. But before we could even bring it to the RAC process, as a member of the Board of Directors, we had to go present it back to the Board of Directors for Utah Bowmans. Our Board of Directors consists of representatives from each of the archery clubs affiliate with Utah Bowmans. We believe we represent many of the archery hunters in the state of Utah. It was voted unanimously from our board to move forward with this. So we believe that there's a lot of momentum behind this. I, for one, I have 15 Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep points. Someday I hope I draw a bighorn sheep tag. If this were accepted down the road, I would for sure choose option B. I am, personally, born and raised in Roosevelt. This is like home for me. And I grew up hunting the area here, and I grew up with a family that rifle hunted. So I am dyed and true to rifle hunting as well, muzzle hunting, but my passion right now is archery. So I would choose this option. So, thank you.
Well, I'd just like to say I think it's a great proposal. And,
thank you.
I think you did a nice job presenting it.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I support the concept, but I think you've got some different issues there with the moose, because people scout for moose and they hunt individual animals.
Yep.
And that's going to be a real problem in some of the popular moose areas, because they scout hard and they scout for months and they know what moose they're hunting.
And can I, is it okay to address that?
Yeah, and let me just finish that. The other species, I don't know if there's any goat issues or not. Out here, it wouldn't be a real problem. It's so vast. But on the early hunts, I think, even though I support what you're trying to do and the whole concept thing, I think on moose specifically, you're going to have a problem.
Okay. Thank you. Good feedback. I lost my wife and she'll keep it all. Thank you. Okay. Anything else? Any other concerns, questions? Thank you for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin.
Very helpful.
Okay, good. All right. Well, I think that's kind of it for our meeting for tonight.
Motion for adjournment.
Do I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion.
Joe.
I'll second it.
All right.
Melissa.
Joe.
Motion.
Melissa. All right. Again, I'd like to thank everybody for coming out tonight. Our next meeting here for the RAC is November 17th. There'll be topics of CWMU management plans, rule amendments, elk management plan recommendations at the statewide level, and a few waterfowl recommendations as well. So again, appreciate the public being here tonight and everybody's RAC attendance. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks.